and biodiversity conservation at our disposal. Yes, we need to use always the best science available to guide us. Yes, we need to protect our Pacific Northwest forests as they are such an important element in addressing the climate crisis. Above all, we need to act with humility given how much we do not know, and to act with great patience and caution given future unanticipated changes. We cannot know how our Pacific Northwest forests will evolve, and thus we must work to keep all our options open so we have even more flexibility in our decisions and actions in the future. Beyond carbon sequestration and storage, beyond recreation pursuits, beyond providing life-giving water, we need to restore our forests to allow us to, as Gifford Pinchot III so eloquently stated, his grandson, quote, seize what is a deeper part of our nature, end quote. We need the forests more than ever for the spiritual solace they provide us.
Well, Rand, I had more questions for you, but I think that is a really beautiful place to start to wrap us up, actually. And for folks wanting to learn more, just get the book. That book is Forest Under Siege. And as you mentioned, you can find it at Powell's. You can find it at a number of other places.
Yeah, the book can easily be purchased online through the publisher, Washington State University Press, WSU Press online. Powell's obviously will have a copy. Other bookstores in the area will have copies as well. But certainly they can be purchased online.
Rand, unless there's anything we've missed, I just want
This is KBOO Portland, listener-powered, non-corporate community radio.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Engineering Committee meets on the first Thursday of the month at 7 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
Holla! Welcome to the Coalition Black Trade Unionist segment of Labor Radio, celebrated here on KBOO 90.7 FM, highlighting the works of the working class, by the working class, for the working class, where the heart of the community comes alive 7 days a week. My name is Tina Turner-Warfin. I'm the first vice president of AFSCME Retiree Chapter and the president of the Oregon Chapter of the Coalition of Black Trade Unionists. I'm a retired public employee and was represented by Oregon AFSCME during my active working years. Ladies, introduce yourselves.
Hello, I'm Dr. Audrey Terrell. I'm retired from the United Auto Workers International Staff Women's Department in Detroit, Michigan. I am currently the vice president of the Oregon Coalition of Black Trade Unionists, and I'm also president and CEO of the Dr. Audrey Terrell Institute, and the regional women's director for Region 10 of the Coalition of Black Trade Union.
Good evening, listeners. This is Deborah Hall, and I'm the current secretary treasurer of the Oregon Coalition of Black Trade Unionists. I'm also a retired employee from Portland Community College and past president of the classified union there. And currently I am serving in the city of Vancouver as a commissioner with the Civil Service Commission. Thank you and welcome to the show.
Today, we bring to you a special treat, a young sibling we consider a PDX community ambassador. Some of his accomplishments include the Q Center, the co-founder of the Black Resistance Fund, Resilience Fund, former executive director at Know Your City, and he is the current founder and CEO of Brown Hope. Thank you for joining us, Cameron Whitten.
Hola. Thank you, Tina. Thank you, Dr. Audrey. And thank you, Deborah, for having me today. I'm really looking forward to this conversation.
So, Brother Cameron, welcome to our Labor Radio segment. Can you give our listeners the background and origin of Brown Hope?
Yeah, I'm happy to do that. And so Brown Hope is a racial justice nonprofit that is based here in Portland, Oregon. We've been serving this community since 2018. And our wild dream is to inspire a world free of racism. And we do that by creating people-powered opportunities to collectively heal from racial trauma. We look at what's going on right now in this country, but also what's going on here in Portland. And we know that our trauma didn't show up just overnight. We understand that there are decades and centuries, legacies of injustice and harm that needs deep healing for the society. And so we've done so many new partnerships since 2018, programs like Power Hour and Black Resilience Fund, Equity Beyond, Solidarity Squad. We've done a lot of innovative work to really build the type of multiracial movement and community that we need to all thrive. And so we encourage you to learn out more information about this organization by visiting the website www.brownhope.org.
So, Brother Cameron, what is your current operational structure?
Yeah, so Brown Hope has always been powered through allies and volunteers helping us do work. And so when Brown Hope was first created in 2018, the first thing that we did before we ever had any programs, before we ever started raising money, we started having monthly meetings and we opened the doors to every person to show up. We especially called on what we refer to as racially privileged allies, and we had them come to these monthly meetings, and it would be about 30 people each time. And we talked about, so who's in the room? What talents do you have? You know, we were talking about the logo and the mission statement and, you know, social media posts and childcare, you know, in addition to actually doing our work. And that really evolved in 2020 with the Black Resilience Fund, where we were raising millions of dollars and providing mutual aid to thousands of Black Portlanders in our community. And so the action team is really doing a lot of incredible work and with Brown Hope this year. And we're grateful for all of our volunteers who are stepping up and helping us move the dial forward on racial justice.
Excellent, excellent. Hey, Brother Cameron, this is Deborah Hall. How you doing?
I'm good. Good to see you, Sister Deborah. I miss you on the bus.
Yeah, I didn't see you today either. All right. So I followed your community work and have a fond memory of how we met. I am attending Bethel AME Church here in Portland. And the first time that we met, you had attended on a Sunday. We were currently in our Bible study reading the book Anatomy of Peace. And you had seen, I guess, on our webpage or some that we were reading that book, and you came and joined us that Sunday, and our pastor introduced us at the altar.
Oh, no, I ended up coming to the service, and the Anatomy of Peace was in the printed brochure, and so excited because the Anatomy of Peace is the most influential book that I've ever read. So that's a shout out to the Holy Book. But for me, the Anatomy of Peace, which was written by the Arbinger Institute, I first read that in 2019. It changed my life. It actually, within 2 weeks of me finishing that book, I'm on the phone with my father for the first time in 13 years. I had not talked to him since I was a teenager because of the physical and emotional abuse that I endured as a kid. And who would have thought that one book could somehow, 13 years of trauma completely resolved, I was able to forgive him and actually develop a healthy relationship, and I'm so glad he's in my life right now. And so I've given that book out to over 100 people, and I really think that it makes a huge difference. And so to see Bethel AME talking about that book, it just put a smile on my face. And you got to bring me back for another interview. We could talk a whole hour about Anatomy of Peace.
That book has changed my life as well. And then the other meeting. So Sunday morning, I'm going to church, riding the bus, and I'm getting off the bus there. And who do I meet face to face? This big smile. The bus driver is all like, "Oh, it's Cameron!" Right. So then I asked, I'm like, "Wait a minute," because he looked familiar. And I asked, I said, "Are you Cameron Whitten?" You said yes, and you asked my name. gave me this big, beautiful hug. And it was just, you have a very warm and inviting personality. And I just thank you for that. And then, so I get home the next day, I get a text from Tina. We're interviewing Cameron Witten on our show. I'm like, oh my God.
Oh my gosh, you manifested me.
Right?
Let there Incredible. Be Cameron.
Incredible. So I do have a couple questions for you. So Cameron, right. what motivated you to become a community activist?
Oh, I love this question. And interesting enough, I was invited to a panel conversation during Black History Month by this incredible organization called the Oregon Coalition of Black Trade Unionists. And yes, it was Tita and Dr. Audrey. They brought me in for a Black History Month conversation around racial justice and its intersections and relationship to the labor rights movement. Because as we know, poor people, working people, Black folks, brown folks, indigenous folks, we have a united struggle. And when one of our groups win, we all win. And so it was great to be there and speak on that panel and also talk about the most important activist influence in my entire life. I encourage y'all to know this name because this is the name of the man who helped me become the person that I am today. His name is Muhammad Bouazizi. And he was just a man. You know, he was a man from Tunisia. He sold produce and he was living, as we are familiar with, living in authoritarian fascist government where he was experiencing harassment from government officials who would take his money, steal his scale that he used to make a living. They would literally spit in his face. And sadly, we are all too familiar with what it's like to live in a government that would so trample on human rights. Muhammad Bouazizi got to a breaking point where he was tired of his humanity and his dignity and his respect being denied and being exploited. He was tired of being abused. And he did something that most souls would not do. And he went through the governor's mansion in Tunisia and he stood outside in the square and he screamed out for the governor to come outside and talk to him. And the governor, of course, refused. And he came by the next day as his brother put out a camera and filmed him. Muhammad Bouazizi doused himself with gasoline and he lit a match and he lit himself on fire. That video of self-immolation was posted onto Twitter. It was retweeted millions of times around the world, and it was the direct catalyst for the Arab Spring movement, which toppled governments in both Tunisia and Egypt. And it also served as the precursor and the inspiration for the Occupy Wall Street movement in the United States 2 years later. That's when I first learned about Muhammad Bouazizi. I was volunteering at the time for a group called Food Not Bombs. And they had this meeting and they were just sitting around saying, oh yeah, in a week, this thing called Occupy is coming to Portland. And I remember just rushing back to where I was staying, getting on a laptop and feeling so inspired as I went through that rabbit hole and learning everything about this movement and seeing for the first time in my life, in my entire living memory, millions of people across racial, economic, gender, and spiritual backgrounds all coming together as united front to address this real issue of wealth and income inequality. And as someone who is a survivor of child abuse, as someone who was homeless when they first came to Portland, a queer Black person here living in the whitest major city in America, you don't understand. That was like the first time I thought I could breathe in my life, because I felt like we were finally going to do something to make this world better and safer for everyone. And lo and behold, I learned the reason why Occupy came in the first place was this man, Muhammad Bouazizi, who the world treated like a literal nobody. And for somebody, again, as someone who was queer and Black and homeless and abused, this world, this society, tried its hardest every day to make me feel like I was nothing, less than. So here I am learning about how a nobody literally changed the world. That's how I first realized that I could do it myself. I could change the world. And so I made a pledge, a commitment to myself that day. I wasn't going to immolate myself physically, but I would light my soul on fire spiritually and do everything with my energy and my power to change the world. And so I give a lot of credit to Mohammed Bouazizi. I can't imagine where I'd be if not for his story and his legacy. And I just hope that it doesn't take more people dying and being martyred like that for us to wake up and do the right thing.
Wow. You know, that's, you know, most things where change has happened, it's been one or a very small group of people that have been the catalyst, you know, and it's just some amazing stuff. So Cameron, so how did George Floyd's murder influence Brown Hope's mission and vision?
Yeah, beautiful question. I still get very emotional when I think of George Floyd. Because George Floyd did change the world. And most importantly, George Floyd was a human being. You know, he had his flaws, he had his demons, and yet he had a good heart. And he had so much to live for. I remember where I was when I first heard about George Floyd dying in 2020. I was at home. Most of us were. It was COVID. And when I first heard, I wasn't surprised. You know, I had been a Black Lives Matter activist since before Black Lives Matter was even a movement. I first went to my first vigil for a dead Black man killed by the police here in Portland in January 2020, literally 3 months after I moved here to Portland. And that was for Aaron Campbell, who was shot and killed by Ron Fashauer. So when I had heard about George Floyd being murdered, I'd been to all the rallies, all the vigils, and I just braced myself. I think that's what I remember, that's what I did. I braced myself because I am too used to people turning their backs to Black pain and Black suffering. So I was surprised that, you know, the very next thing that happened, I did go to there was a first night rally after George Floyd was murdered right by my house. So I went to Peninsula Park to pay my respects, but I thought that was going to be it. And then I wake up the next day and I'm getting inundated, flooded with all these text messages and phone calls and emails. Yeah. I don't know how some of these people got my number. And there are all these white people being like, hey, Cameron, I know, happen to a bunch of us Black folks. And they're like, hi, Cameron, how are you doing? Are you okay? Do you need anything? I was so confused, people. I was asking my Black friends, I was like, is there some kind of like secret Medium article that said checking on your Black friends that we don't know about? Because it seemed like somebody told them to do it. I was like, I'd never seen that before. That was not the first time somebody was killed. A Black man was killed by the police. That's not the first time we heard a Black man say, I can't breathe, because he was being choked out. Eric Garner was the first time I saw that in 2014. So there is nothing different about the moment. The only thing, let's be very honest, was COVID. Yeah. Everybody was locked in their homes and the media was covering the death of George Floyd every single day. You could not hide from it. Because the reality is, when you see the pain and you sit with it, it makes you think, it makes you reflect, it makes you realize. And so we saw accountability and we saw action, because for once America was confronted with the bitter ugliness of racism and white supremacy. Right. The reality that's always been there, but since COVID and since whatever reason, people have found a way to avoid looking at the truth and they have turned away from the reality. And but I know when George Floyd was murdered in 2020, we came together in a way that I'd never seen before in my life. And I tell people, 2020 was the time in my lifetime that I felt the most hopeful when it came to addressing racial injustice and racial division here in this country. We really came together across political divides, bipartisan. You know, we all saw, oh, this was a failure of the American public. And this is showing some deep wounds that need to be healed. And we were willing to make so many commitments and back them up with action and dollars. With Black Resilience Fund, so I am the co-founder of Black Resilience Fund, that Black Resilience Fund started as a Facebook post. I went to Facebook, you know, because these folks were asking, you know, how, you know, do you need any help? And I said, I know Black people who need help. I know they have grocery bills and utilities. If you can spare anything, give me some money. And within the first day, raising $11,000 that we, you know, Black people were giving me, Black people were giving me screenshots of their utility bills. And I was like on my phone literally for 11 hours texting back and forth. It felt like I was working on Wall Street, with the exception that I was actually, I was actually helping the community. And so, after 11 hours of just like going back and forth, you know, getting money, sending it out, I woke up the next day and we still had about $3,000 left over. And I knew once people found out I was giving out free money, there would be more people. So I was like, okay, I need to keep raising money. I need to keep raising awareness. I don't want to keep doing this through PayPal and Cash App. So I started the Black Resilience Fund on GoFundMe. And then boom, within that first day, it raised $55,000. Day two raised $155,000. And by the 29th day, raised $1 million that we did over 11,000 individual donors.
It can happen to people. All right.
And that was real reparations. Right. It's what we've been waiting for centuries in this country, for the healing that needs to happen. You know, I will take thoughts and prayers, but I'm going to take thoughts, prayers, and some dollars too, because we have so many resources in this country. We have so many possibilities. If America's supposed to be this land of the free and this land of opportunity, where's the freedom and where's the opportunity? Where's the beef, lady? Where's the beef? Where's the freedom and opportunity that you keep saying America is full of? Let me see it.
That's right. Thank you very much. That is it for me, and you are a joy and a pleasure to have on the show.
Thank you.
I'd like to remind our listeners that they're listening to the Coalition of Black Trade Unionists segment of Labor Radio, highlighting the works of the working class, by the working class, for the working class, here on KBOO 90.7 FM, where the heart of the community comes alive 7 days a week. If you've just joined us, you are listening to our guest today. His name is Cameron Whitten. He is the founder and CEO of Brown Hope.
Brother Cameron, Brown Hope has something referred to as the action team. What is its function?
Wonderful question. We just had an amazing relaunch meeting for the action team just last week. And the action team is really at the heartbeat of the work Brown Hope does. We invite people of all walks of life. And what I want to especially name, being here on Labor Radio, understanding the power of everyday people, nurses and teachers and students and retired folks, folks in construction, folks who are social workers. That's who makes up Action Team. Everyday Portlanders who all find what they can do with their time and their talents to work together and to accomplish the mission of Brown Hope. And the mission of Brown Hope is a mission of love and healing and multiracial momentum. We particularly call upon what we say, racially privileged allies. Y'all know who you are. And so we are calling on people who understand that there are inequities and injustices that exist. There is privilege with people who have a certain skin tone where they can speak up and they have access to resources and also tables that I, as a Black person, do not. And so we call on people to take what we call the baton of privilege and pass it forward. And so the action team is the place for racially privileged allies to come in and contribute their time and energy and help support the work of Black Resilience Fund and Brown Hope. In this year alone, we've had 15 community events that we've brought people together. And I want to give a shout out to all the volunteers who have helped make these events happen. And we have done so much. We have inspired folks. We have fed folks. We have sung. We have provided healing services. We have provided education. And I do believe we're just getting started. And so if you want to learn more about the action team, I encourage you to go to brownhope.org and learn more. We're going to have ongoing action team meetings once a month on the fourth Tuesdays of the month from 6:30 to 8:30 Everyone is welcome. If you're looking for a way to get out of the stagnation and the inertia and this feeling of defeat and despair, come be a part of a group that fully embodies hope in action. I encourage you to check out the Action Team.
Well, Brother Cameron, I just got to ask you about a sponsored community event you just had called the An Interdependence Day Potluck. How was it received by the public? Describe its intent.
Wonderful question. And so the event was called Gather, and it was an Interdependence Day potluck that we had on July 2nd at Wilshire Park in Northeast Portland. And this was actually the second time we had an Interdependence Day event. Our first time was when Brown Oak was founded in 2018. We had an Interdependence Day celebration, and we had one again this year because, you know, we know that the holiday, Independence Day on July 4th, comes with a lot of hurt and pain and trauma for Black, Brown, Indigenous folks. Because one of these challenges in America is we say we want to celebrate freedom and America's history and culture, but that comes with an erasure both of injustices that have been happening for centuries, but also the current realities, racial injustice and social division that's in this plaguing this country. And so the issue is, on 4th of July, there is a lot of whitewashing and a lot of erasure of our stories and of our ancestors. And so we didn't want to just recreate that trauma and harm. We wanted to reclaim that day and use what we call Interdependence Day to truly uplift the voices of Black and Indigenous communities, because the United States of America is a land that was stolen land, that, and this country was built by stolen people. And so we had multiple Indigenous leaders do land recognitions and Indigenous prayers and blessings for our space. We had song circle full of joy. We also had a 24-minute live reenactment of the Frederick Douglass speech that I did for his 4th of July speech called What to the American Slave is Your 4th of July? Yes. And it was absolutely powerful. Mm-hmm. I can't think of a better leader during this time to be speaking truth and power. And Frederick Douglass, he spoke with ferocity and boldness, anger and clarity. And that was the thing that I love the most about Frederick Douglass, because at the time, one of the reasons why white Americans had legalized slavery, because they said that Black people lacked intellectual fortitude, meaning that we didn't have any like working brains, so therefore we could be slaves. And they were completely dumbfounded and silenced and amazed by Frederick Douglass is smarter than all of them. And so the way that he just spoke and modeled what Black brilliance really looked like. And so to speak his words, and especially just if when you read that speech, you'll see, like, did he write that last week? Because he spoke even during that time that as a Black person who had to escape himself into freedom, he was born a slave and escaped himself into freedom, and here he is being invited by white abolitionists sympathetic to the idea of freeing enslaved Black people, and him still being told by his so-called allies, well, maybe if you were nicer to the slave owners, they would free the slaves. Which of course Frederick Douglass treated as preposterous and ridiculous, because it was. So it was incredible to use that speech. And a lot of people were so inspired and saw how it was even drew parallels to the realities currently happening in Washington, D.C. And so it was a deep political awakening. And I thank that opportunity. I also want to say deep gratitudes to our community partner for that event, Lou Love Healing. And that is actually a business that is owned by a white woman. So this event was truly about building multiracial momentum. Understand that we are stronger together. And so I want to see more of that cross-racial divide collaboration lead to that unity and that harmony and that shared prosperity that we all deserve. And I think the labor movement knows that so well, and I'm glad to see that Brown Trump is able to embody that with our own work.
Hey, Brother Man, we're almost at the end of our interview, and we haven't talked about Amplify PDX Block Party.
Thank you. Happy to give a shout-out. So I'm super, super excited about this. Brown Hope is helping to put on an event this weekend, y'all. So if you're around Saturday, August 9th from 1 to 7 p.m., we are a co-organizer of the Amplify PDX CBS Block Party. This is a collaboration of 25 social justice nonprofits who are coming together to raise awareness of our work, to raise funds, and to help the community. We are going to have music and drag performances. I'll be doing a 15-minute poetry set. We're going to have kid activities. It'll be all ages for the family. It's going to be a memorable experience. So I encourage you to find out more. It's going to be at Open Signal in Northeast Portland off of MLK. Go to Open Signal's website to find out more about Amplify PDX. You can also find it on the Brown Hope website. And we hope to see you there. This is going to be a time for that healing and to learn. If you want to get involved in community and you want to have some fun while you're doing it, you're going to find 25 organizations. You're going to find something that is going to make your heart soar. So I encourage you to check it out.
Any more questions from the panel, from the guests?
No, we got to wrap this one up.
Well, so thank you once again, Brother Cameron, for the careful attention in building a pathway for Black, Brown, and Indigenous people to heal from the impact of racism. And thank you very, very much for being here.
I did end by saying that the Coalition of Black Trade Unions, we meet the second Tuesday of every month at 6 p.m., we have suspended our face-to-face meeting and are utilizing Google Meet to conduct our monthly meetings. So our next meeting will be held September the 9th, 2025. You all have a safe Labor Day, but I also want to include that our email address is at orcbtu10@gmail.com. We would love to hear from you. Join us in our evolving adventure of representing Black union workers. We would also like to announce that the month of September is National Recognition Month for Sickle Cell Anemia.
Yes.
So with that, holla.
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 Listeners, sponsored stations count on you, not Arbitron. So when you push their buttons, you get radio that turns you on.
Hi there, this is Ann Feeney, and you are listening to listener-supported community radio, KVOO FM in Portland.